Stay tuned for Talk Back with Happy Felton. If you're a father or mother, we don't have to tell you that children often take suggestions from outsiders more readily than they will from you. Oh, suggestions like washing the hands more frequently or raking up the leaves or helping with the dishes. Well, if your children suddenly start volunteering their services, the chances are they got the idea from ABC's Saturday morning program, No School Today. You'll enjoy No School Today as much as the kids do. It's a get-together with the youngsters and gives you a chance to relax. Remember to listen to No School Today on Saturday morning.
Say, we've got a real familiar face showing up today, with a familiar figure and an even more familiar laugh to go with it. Can you recognize who this is just from hearing? Doesn't that just make you want to laugh yourself? Did you guess who it is? You'll find out what he had to say in answer to a letter today on
Talk Back, transcribed and presented by the American Broadcasting Company, starring...
Hi there, this is Happy Felton.
And the other star of the show is...
You, my friends. To make Talk Back happen, we need your letters. Send the letter to me. We'll see if we can't get an answer for you. My address for your mail is Happy Felton, Post Office Box 40, Grand Central Station, New York City. But let's dip into that Box 40 mailbag, see what's the first letter up for today. Tucson, Arizona. That's where it's from. And hey, it's addressed to me by Mary Nicholson. Guess she wants me to find an expert for her. That's okay, too, so let me read the letter. Dear Happy Felton, can you tell me how to solve this problem? Are others fooled same as me, or am I the easy mark? Many times I have been touched for a loan when friends or relatives were hard up. But try and get the money back. That's the question. I know for sure if I could get some of the money back that I loaned, I sure could use it to get myself a few things. If you ask them for it just by hinting, they ignore it. If you threaten them with a lawsuit, you lose friends and are called hard-hearted. If you write them a letter requesting the money, they throw the letters away. Can you tell me how to be able to get back a loan made to friends? Yes, I know when you turn them down, you're no good. I had it happen even in the family. Sincerely yours, Mary Nicholson. Okay, Mrs. Nicholson, I guess I know how you feel. Hey, Hap, can you let me have 10 till Wednesday? Only Wednesday generally turns out to be doomsday. But we've got an answer from Mr. Joseph Field, whose name is on the shingle of the Field Adjustment Bureau, who are in the business of collecting bad debts. Talk back, Mr. Field.
The truth is, Miss Nicholson, that people should always be prepared to either lose a friend or a relative when giving a loan of money. For the loan of a few dollars, say about 5 or 10, those I call a mere touch, you really can't do too much on those small loans. But when it comes to a bit larger, believe me, it is just as easy to say no, regardless of the borrower's circumstances. There are many people who are approached for a loan and who seem to have a stock phrase by saying, "Gosh, I don't have any ready cash, and I don't know when I can expect some." It is true that the excuse may sound fishy, but it would be enough of a hint to the borrower, and he may not think much of you then. But that will wear off a lot easier than were you to give a loan and try to get it back at a later date. Well, now, Mary Nicholson, let us get down now as to how you can really collect your money. First, I must ask you whether you have any proof whatever of those loans that you have made. You must remember, going into an agency for your collections, you must show definite proof, whether it be an IOU, a letter, or something definitely to show that that person had borrowed some money from you. Now, in the event that you shouldn't have any of that proof, I would suggest that you sit right down, write a letter to those people that owe you the money. Don't be harsh, because you must remember that you've got to get your proof on these loans. Just in a mere way, ask them when they can pay you back this money. They will reply to you, no doubt, saying that they can't pay you at the present time, but possibly at a later date. That is good enough for you. That is the proof that you need for the loan which you have given to these various people. Now it is a question of turning your account over for a collection, because there is no doubt that all the methods that you have tried have failed you. You bring all this proof into an agency, whether it be myself or anyone else. We would contact the individual that had borrowed this money from you. And be assured, Mary Nicholson, that no harsh methods are used. Very often we bring out the true sense of this honest debt which you have loaned to them. And we are very often in a position to work out a very nice arrangement of weekly or monthly payments. Have no fear of giving your matters over to any collection agency.
Thanks, Mr. Field. There you are, Mrs. Nicholson. I'd like to add something to the advice, too. When you're downtown in Tucson marketing this afternoon, drop in the public library. Read over part of Shakespeare's play called Hamlet. Look up scene 3 of Act 1. Besides all the talk, we're sending you a 5-piece set of Hammercraft Club Aluminum, the waterless cooking utensils. Rockford, Illinois is the next postmark. It's a letter from Mrs. Alice Bjorklund. She's quoting a little Shakespeare, too, to start out her letter. Let me read it to you. Dear Helena Rubinstein, to die or not to die, that is the question. As I approach the dread 40-year mark, my hair is practically gray. And while my husband says definitely not to have it dyed, I notice his eyes follow younger-looking women with hair of one shade. I would like some expert advice on this subject, since I have heard that dyed hair makes your face look older, showing up small lines. Sincerely, Mrs. Alice Bjorklund. Okay, Mrs. Bjorklund, to die or not to die? That is your question. Helena Rubinstein got your letter, and she asked her niece, Mala Rubinstein, to answer it for you, since that's sort of her department over at her body and fender works establishment. Talk back, Mala Rubinstein.
Oh, definitely. I feel, Mrs. Bjorklund, that you should do everything to improve yourself. If you feel that your husband's eyes follow the one with the rather blonde, brown, or a medium brown, or reddish hair, by all means, just do it the way he likes it. Besides, I feel women not only do their now tint their hair, they just make up their hair, something extremely new. If you don't like it, you don't have to live with it. You can just wash it out right off your hair. Remember one thing, Mrs. Bjorklund, that when you do put a rinse or the special dye in your hair, which I know is going to be very becoming, do not forget to do something about your skin, because sometimes it is necessary to add that little silk foundation in color that is a little yellow and a little more rose. Your lipstick, instead of bluish, might be a little bit more pink, more on the tender pink side. And maybe your eyebrows should fit it, and lashes should fit the color of your hair also. Just make it a very soft blue mascara, maybe brownish pencil, or any other make like to use, and one that will suit the color of your hair. In my own experience, Mrs. Bjorklund, it's amazing to see what women are able to do to themselves. I heard recently a very amusing remark. A woman has changed her makeup. She has even changed the color of her hair. It was not a drastic change, but anyhow, from a very drab grayish to kind of a golden blonde, very soft color. She put a new dress on, she reduced a little too, and when she came home and then her husband looked at her, he said, "What a wonderfully becoming hat you have." It proves that sometimes they don't exactly realize what it is, and I think that's the very subtle way of being able to do things to yourself which improve you and really make you look younger and more beautiful.
Well, there's a husband for you, Mala Rubinstein. I'm the kind that wouldn't have even noticed the hat, I suppose. But thanks a lot for taking time out from the famous Helena Rubinstein salons to come over and give Mrs. Bjorkman the benefit of your experience. And Mrs. B, we're sending you a lovely strand of Laguna simulated pearls that come in a handsome gold kid carrying case. They'll go with any color hair. I hope you like them. Hey there, Barbara Rosen, down in Miami, Florida. We got your letter to Edward Arnold, and I've got news for you. We got Edward Arnold to answer it for you. Of course, right now, Barbara and I are the only ones that know what's going on, so let me read your whole letter. Dear Mr. Edward Arnold, my husband and I often reminisce about the old-time shows in years gone by. But, of course, the only bad part is that he says I cannot prove all I do say. So please, Mr. Arnold, tell me if I'm right. I remember you way back in the stock company of Richmond, Virginia, where I was born. I didn't miss a show of yours. You were with Grace Scott, Lucille Laverne, and also John Warner. Tell me, Mr. Arnold, what became of the rest of the cast? I am very proud of what a good name you have made for yourself. I love those parts of Mr. President you play now. When I see you in the movies, I feel as if I have known you all my life. I still have one of your old pictures. You're a good symbol of real American manhood. I must have a good answer, as my husband will call me a fibber. So talk back if I am not mistaking you for another Eddie Arnold. Yours truly, Mrs. Barbara Rosen. Okay, Mrs. Rosen. Edward Arnold got your letter, read it over, and it sure started a flood of his recollections. Mrs. Rosen's waiting for you to talk back, Eddie, so it's up to you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Rosen, for your nice letter, and I'm happy to be in New York, so I'm able to answer it personally. Thank you for saying that you remember me way back in the stock company days of Richmond, Virginia. Of course, this is going back, I think, somewhere between 1912 and 13. I'm not sure. Now, in that cast, first I must tell you, I was never with Grace Scott, who I remember very, very well. John Warner was her leading man, and I was the leading man for Lucille Laverne. Those were the members of the company, and Arthur Berkeley was the director. Now, what became of these people is hard to tell. Of course, you know John Warner died. Where Gracie Scott is, I don't know. Of course, she was a very popular girl there, and Frank Morgan is still alive, who was a member of the Gracie Scott company. And, as you know, Lucille Laverne passed on. This is not very cheerful news to you who wants to find out what became of people. We're only put on this earth for so long, after all. I probably am one of the fortunate ones of that group who survived, and I'm still going strong. Of course, you know, Mrs. Rosen, at the time we're talking about, I was a very young man. I had nice, wavy, curly hair. I was tall and slim. And now I'm getting a little balder and perhaps a little stouter. Naturally, we all get a little subtle. But perhaps you'll be interested in knowing what happened to me after that. Well, after we got out of town, we did take the company down to Savannah, Georgia, and again we were stranded there. The sheriff came down on us, and we had to give a benefit performance to get out of Savannah. I then came back to Richmond, and I lived with some friends for a while because I'm not ashamed to say it. I didn't have very much money, and they took me in and gave me a room. But I came back to New York in 1917, and again, it was pretty tough to have get a job. And what was more, they couldn't see me in a white tie or a black tie or a business suit, so there were no blue shirt leads, as we called them then. I finally was selected to play in a picture, in a play, rather, called Whistling in the Dark with Ernest Truex, which play took me to the coast. And when I got there, I stayed there. They seemed to want me for some reason or other, but it was the break that every actor waits for. And so from then on, we became more or less successful in pictures. Of course, the first star part was Diamond Jim Brady. I've been out there for 18 years. And going on tour with this play now, it'll be the first time in 18 years that I've been on a stage. But if you have a chance and you come to Washington, I open there at the Gaiety Theater, and I'll be there 2 weeks, and I'm quite sure that I will remember your name, and if you want to come backstage and say hello and have a little chat and go through the old days, nothing would please me more.
There's one for you, Mrs. Rosen. Eddie Arnold says, drop in and see him whenever you're in town. Well, we're sending you a LeJohn electric hair dryer, Mrs. Rosen, one that we got from my friends over at the J.J. Connolly Corporation, the well-known distributors over here on West 40th Street. Here's a letter to Jinx Falkenberg, and it starts out, do you think that girls who go out to business have less chance of getting married? Talk it over with your husband, Tex, and see if he reacts against women who... Hey, look at the clock. Jinx will have to answer that one tomorrow. Along with a lady who puts on a high-pressure scream about high prices that got a high-pressure moan right back. Now, don't forget the address for your letters to me. Happy Felton, Post Office Box 40, Grand Central Station, New York City. We'll be back tomorrow, so tune in and see what the good word for the day is on Talk Back.
Remember, the address for your letters is Happy Felton, Post Office Box 40, Grand Central Station, New York City. Talk Back is produced by Gordon Auchincloss, edited by Pierre Verspitt, transcribed in New York. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.